I'm going to continue here. I think I'm going to finish my series. I finally am going to finish it after many months here. I've got a handout for everybody and a little bit to give to you to kind of go over the flow of what we've been talking about for the past months. Some of you may have missed some of the sermons I've given regarding the law of God, but I'd like to finish today and going over at least the point when we're looking at the book of the law, mostly talking about the Pentateuch. There are many other scattered scriptures that talk about the law too that I've jotted down for our memory. But the point is to try to focus and look at the way that God presents his law and the logic of how God looks at it, how God thinks about it. Not to get sometimes to the technicalities, we can get so technical sometimes that we miss the point. And I'll try to go over some examples to cite that today. But the point is that God gave us instruction, and he's regulated it in a way that we are forced in life to make distinctions between clean and unclean. We're continually coming into contact with both, and we're confronted with making choices. So for those that remember going back years, and I like to remind us of this, I like to remind myself, because I remember all those years we went to the Feast of Tabernacles, and normally right around the last day, we were going to get the two trees sermon. And I remember always trying to think, I don't know when it came to be when I finally understood the point of that. I understand it more clearly than I ever did before, and that every day we're coming into contact with choices between clean and unclean, between the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. To choose one, we're making the choices to choose one and reject the other. Now, these are physical matters, but God designed it that way in order to teach spiritual points and principles. In life, we're constantly confronted with clean and unclean actions, clean and unclean thoughts. And we're being trained that we need to be conscious of always, in every facet of our life, of making a distinction between the clean and unclean, of rejecting the unclean, choosing the clean. That's the way that God designed it to be. Now, we looked at some of the physical laws last time. If you remember, I remember going to, if you remember, if somebody were to ask you, where can you find the distinction of foods in God's law? I think many of you remember that as memory scriptures. I'll never forget Leviticus 11 and what? Deuteronomy 14. Those are two areas. We went through those and saw the distinctions that God gave in detail of what not to eat of the fish, of the beasts, or the animals. Let's go back to Leviticus 11, in fact, because he talked about the fish, the birds, and the insects. And it's so interesting how we look at it, because as I look at some of those nature programs that are out there, when they're left out by themselves and some of the things that they eat, and I'm thinking, you know, if I was that hungry, I would just not eat some of those things. At least I don't think I would ever, especially knowing that God designated something in a certain way. But there are some things that we can eat that you still may not want to eat, such as crickets. Has anybody had a meal of crickets lately? Well, God said that those are clean to eat. Now, because we've grown up not eating crickets, there are probably some brethren in other countries that may actually eat crickets. They may actually taste good. I don't think that God really designed them to taste bad, but you know, there are other foods that you may eat that I still may not like. When I grew up, I remember not drinking at least tomato juice. I sat for, I think, 3 or 4 hours at the table because I was not going to eat that or drink that tomato juice. And my mom would always say, well, you'll learn to like it. I still don't buy that to this day. I do think that the taste buds develop and change over time. I'm not certain of that. All I knew is I also grew up not liking regular eggs. With the whites, I like the yolks, but I still don't like the whites. And I was a little bit surprised that when my kids were young, I would take some of that. I'd still eat the white too because I know that that goes together. But I would cut off some of the white and I'd give it to the kids and they would just slurp down that white. And I'm going, I cannot figure this out. I used to hate the whites, but they seem to like it. So I'm going, fine, they can have all the whites that they want. But there are certain, again, distinctions sometimes that we like or we don't like. The point is where I'm going at here. God said there are certain bugs, actually, that are okay to eat. But we may look at it and go, I don't like those, but it's the way that we are raised. So the point is if you ever find yourself on some deserted island without fish or without beef, you might look for a few crickets. And I think if you might saute them, they might not be too bad. But God designed, again, certain things to be clean and certain things not to be clean. So if we go to Leviticus 11, though, let's go over to verse 24 and we'll see something else here. Leviticus 11 and verse 24. By these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of any of them shall be unclean until even. So now he's talking about touching and washing, and these are not ceremonial rituals. These didn't have to do with the priesthood. Now we have to look and see what God is going after here. Here we find physical principles of health. Due to the society that we live in today, we tend to take some of these principles for granted because we live in a society where you have plenty of water. And it's a very simple matter to throw something into a washing machine. But if you had to go to a well and draw a bucket or go to the nearest stream to bathe, the tendency would be to skimp a little bit on the washing or taking a bath. For those here who remember not having the luxury of running water, the frequency of taking a bath was no doubt much less than we have today due to the nature of the time. If you had to go out and boil the clothes in the old wash spot to utilize the scrub board and lye soap, which we had to do, I remember as a camper in 1972, the campers had to wash their own clothes. That wasn't my most favorite activity, but I do remember having an appreciation for those that had to do that. That's the way that you had to wash your clothes. It was quite a chore, and it took a lot of time. Now the ease that we have today, wow, you throw some in, you put the soap in, you push a button, and you wait for it to get done. You know, what a nice convenience that we have today. But the point is that we may read these verses today and take for granted the ease and the luxury of what we have for washing today. God was specifically pointing out the need for the Israelites to be clean. These were matters of sanitation and hygiene. It wasn't necessarily a crime or sin to touch these animals. They just needed to be certain that if they did, they were clean before coming back into a camp of millions of other people. And by the way, that's right before our very eyes today. It's happening in our society. You know, when we were over in the Dominican Republic and we went to the main dining room to eat and sit down, before we came in, there was somebody there that had some of that germicide. And everybody had to wash themselves before they went and sat at their table. When I was on the cruise last spring, everybody had to wash their hands. They actually had sinks in the main dining room that people had to wash their hands. Plus, they had the germicide as well. As you know, there have been many outbreaks on some of these cruise ships because of the lack of washing hands, because of these disease spreading. So this is even happening in our time, and I think we can recognize the danger of what was happening back in the time of the Israelites when they didn't have all this running water. So when God said to do certain things, we can understand a little bit more of the specifics of what he was talking about. Let's continue on here in verse 29. Verse 29, these also will be unclean to you, the creeping things that creep on the earth, the mole, the mouse, the large lizard after its kind. Continuing here, these are unclean to you among all that creep. Whoever touches them when they are dead will be unclean until evening. Anything on which any of them falls when they are dead will be unclean, whether it's any item of wood or clothing or skin or sack. Whatever item is done in which any work is done, it must be put in water. It shall be unclean until evening, and then it will be clean. He always said till evening. There was a purpose here. This was not ceremonial. This was a choice in time for people to make sure and get it to their heads, I've got to be clean. And if it took a few hours to get to that point, there was going to be reflection on, have I made myself clean before I come back into the camp again? If an object was cloth or metal, you could take it out and wash it and scrub it. But if the vessel was porous and had something crawl in it and died, you could not clean a vessel of that type. It simply had to be destroyed. God didn't necessarily explain about germs and bacteria as we understand through science and technology today. Verse 35. Everything on which a part of any such carcass falls will be unclean. Whether it's an oven or cooking stove, it will be broken down, for they are unclean, and it will be unclean to you. Nevertheless, a spring or a cistern in which there is plenty of water shall be clean, but whatever touches any carcass becomes unclean. Now again, in verse 35, these were sun-dried clay ovens that you can still find being used in the Middle East today. Not porcelain-laid self-cleaning type that we have today. There's a big difference in what we cook in, and once again, the convenience. Some of us just push a button and the self-cleaning process takes place and you're left with ash. They didn't have that convenience. Something was porous, there was bacteria that was going to still stay in it. Now, if you find a dead animal lying in a pool, you don't drink the water that's in the pool. Years ago, you found that when the terrorist activity broke out in Rwanda and people were just left dead in some of the lakes. And people would go pull the water from that and they would drink that water. And there were severe outbreaks and diseases and deaths that took place because people were violating this principle. So you bring it all the way up to our time today, and these things were taking place. Now, if it's a running spring, it hasn't contaminated the source of the spring. So you would have to obviously go a bit upstream if you were going to find fresh water. Verse 36, it says, if any part of any such carcass falls on any planting seed which is to be sown, it remains clean. But if any water is put on the seed, and if a part of any carcass falls on it, it becomes unclean for you. Now, this is the seed that's used for planting, not for sprouting or not for eating. So we read once again as we go through these scriptures that God is giving detailed instruction in the area of cleanliness and hygiene. Verse 43, here it says, you shall not make for yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creeps, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them. For I am the Lord your God, therefore you shall consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth, for I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Therefore you shall be holy, for I am holy. Now this is interesting as we look at verse 45. They came out of Egypt, and some of the things, unclean things in Egypt, Egypt made as gods. If you remember some of the plagues that came out, lice and other unclean things. So the Israelites were very familiar with what God was pointing out here. Sometimes we're not, because we didn't grow up around these things. I didn't grow up around pigs or hogs. You know, I had an uncle that had cows, that had chickens. They didn't even know the distinction between and unclean. But that's all that they had. That's all that I came into contact with, thankfully. But there is a distinction here that the Israelites understood. Verse 46, this is the law of the animals and the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters and every creature that creeps on the earth. Look at verse 46. What do you get out of that? This is the law of the animals. Which law? There's, once again, I pointed out that there's lots of laws, aren't there? There's the Ten Commandments. This is called the law of the animals. Under which category of law would this fit? Remember the categories? I'm going to give you a handout as a reminder of this. Remember the judgments, the precepts? Remember the testimonies? What else was there? The statutes. This would fit under the area of statutes because the principles of these laws still exist for God's people today. They are not done away with. We understand the distinction between clean and unclean. And the more news that I get from society around us, the more I'm able to even grasp why God says what he says. As they're trying to eradicate the hog population in the Smoky Mountains, they can't get enough of them. If you get 75% in 1 year, it's not enough. They populate so much that they're having people go out and say, shoot as many as you can. The best way to do it is they're trapping them. And as they trap these numbers, they're having people say, if you want to come and get any of these, fine. But it's interesting, the instruction, the extra instruction that they give on the handling of pigs. They say, you better use gloves. You better not let the blood touch you. This would not be said about cows or any other clean animal. They know the dangers of handling a pig. And God says, stay away from it. Don't touch it. He's created it for a purpose and for us not to touch, not to handle, and certainly not to eat. The law of the animals and the birds and every living creature, it says, that moves in the waters and of every creature that creeps on the earth. Verse 47, to distinguish between the unclean and the clean, between the animal that may be eaten and the animal that may not be eaten. Sometimes I feel bad when I see people still eating unclean food because I know it's not good for them. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 21. Not just that, but they also don't understand the distinction between clean and unclean. Now here's another point here. Sometimes people are hungry and they don't want to waste anything. So we have something, maybe you've heard of something called roadkill. God says, stay away from roadkill, and there's a purpose for it. Leviticus 17, verse 10. And whatever man of the house of, Deuteronomy 14, verse 21. We'll go to Leviticus 17 in a minute here. Deuteronomy 14, verse 21. You shall not eat anything that dies of itself. Now listen, interesting here. This almost looks like it's an unfair God, but we know that God's not unfair. So we've got to look at the purpose of this. You may give it to the alien who is within your gates that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. Is this talking about clean and unclean? It couldn't be. Once again, we've got to step back and look at it and say, why would God say this? We already know not to eat something unclean. You shall not eat anything that dies of itself. This is speaking of something that's clean. But you can give it to the alien, that he may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner, for you're a holy people to the Lord your God. What could verse 21 be referring to? It's something called quality. God wants his people to set a standard that's up here. He doesn't want his people eating roadkill. He wants people to go look for something that's of quality. And another thing, you may not know how the thing died. Let's examine another statute dealing with the blood of a clean animal. Leviticus 17, verse 10. We'll go into a little bit more of this in a bit as well. Leviticus 17, verse 10. And whatever man of the house of Israel, Leviticus 17, verse 10, or of the strangers who dwell among you, who eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and will cut him off from among his people. Now we've got something a bit different. It's not roadkill, it's blood. And you don't give it to a foreigner to eat either. Nobody eats the blood. Verse 11, for the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls, for it's the blood that makes atonement for the soul. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, no one among you shall eat blood, nor shall any stranger who dwells among you eat blood. Whatever man of the children of Israel or of the strangers who dwells among you who hunts and catches any animal or bird that may be eaten shall pour out its blood and cover it with dust, for it's the life of all flesh. The blood sustains its life. Therefore I said to the children of Israel, you shall not eat the blood of any flesh, for the life of all flesh is its blood. Whoever eats of it shall be cut off. It has its specific purpose before God. When we look at the way that God works and every word of God, we may not totally ever understand exactly the point of everything. But it's certainly worthy to know that God created this entire this universe, and everything has got its specific purpose. So there's got to be a good reason. And then when you look at what mankind does over the years, the way to appropriately bleed something, to appropriately dress something, to appropriately drain the blood, you can again see the support given to what God even says to do when he speaks of this in his word. Now look at verse 15. And every person who eats what died naturally or what was torn by beasts, whether he is a native of your own country or a stranger, he shall both wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until even, and then he will be clean. Now, though the animal was clean, if it died naturally, one may not have known the cause, whether it died of sickness or disease. If it was killed by another animal, one may not know if that predator had a disease or a sickness. Again, though it may have been a clean animal, a disease, infection, or sickness certainly could spread among the camp of Israel. God was again making specific things because of the nature of what Israel had to dwell in, and frankly, once again, we're in the same boat today. Although we're not, may not be dwelling among millions of people, you've got jobs and places to go to. And if your fellow workers come in sick, you've got a high likelihood, unless your immune system is really high, that you're going to be sick too. And it's happening to us right before our very eyes. So I look at this today and I ask us to take a look at what's going on in our lives. Maybe there needs to be more that we need to be doing as well as pumping up our immune systems. Sometimes if we get sick, it's a good reason to take a look in the mirror and go, am I under too much stress? Do I need more sleep? Do I need to change my eating habits? Do I need to bolster my immune? What do I need to do to fix this? And then to do our best to go about not just going by God's statutes, by doing some common sense mirror looking and seeing what we need to do to our own bodies to prevent some of these things from happening. So again, this is a good review of God's statutes on what he says for his people, and then to even go far above that and beyond that. Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 22. Let's go back here for a moment. Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 22. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 23, speak to the children of Israel, saying, you shall not eat any fat of the ox or sheep or goat, and the fat of an animal that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by wild beasts may be used in any other way, but you may not eat it by any means. You may not eat it. So once again, now we're speaking of the fat of any animal, even if it's clean. So you've got two things now that we cannot, chunks of lard. That's how Taco Bell used to make their beans. Most use vegetable oil. We still ask because there are still those that use lard in the beans. It's a good thing and it's the right thing to do to ask, you know, if there is lard in any of the beans if you go to a Mexican restaurant. It's a good thing to find out. Second point is you're not to eat the blood of any animal. And the third is we're not to eat something that dies of itself or that was killed or torn by wild animals, even if it's a clean animal. From a health standpoint, you don't know how long it's been lying there or if it was torn by a diseased or even a rabid animal. Now, let's look at some other laws of sanitation and cleanliness in Leviticus chapter 12. Leviticus chapter 12, you're going to find two different issues addressed here. These are matters of health, and there are matters that have ceremonial aspect because they deal with coming into the temple and offering a certain offering. Now, obviously, that doesn't apply today, but there are still certain principles and guidelines that we can find in these scriptures that certainly do apply today. Let's look at verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived and born a male child, then she shall be unclean for 7 days, as in the days of her customary impurity, she shall be unclean. And on the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Now, for some of you, whoever's done research on that, and we were confronted with it all the way back to 1987, this is something for a new dad to be confronted. Do I circumcise? Do I not circumcise? It depends on the age and time of what you're going through at the time. Because I've seen articles on coffee, on wine, on eggs, on milk, on circumcision. That one time that they're going to be all for it, then 2 years later, it's going to all change. It's going to all be, they're all against it. Just wait a little bit longer because it'll change. This was good enough for me. Because at the time, if you circumcise, you're like a really bad parent. You're causing your child all this kind of pain that they don't need to go through. Then at another time, they actually look into it and go, you know, there is a cleanliness aspect of this. So we are going back and forth. And I'm going, you know, this is what God says. And it says on the eighth day. And the real kicker on this that I found it so interesting is on the eighth day, and most of you know it, is when that vitamin K, the blood clotting level, kicks in on the eighth day. It's across the board. That hasn't changed. So God doesn't say, no, I'm not going to do it. Now the eighth day is over. Now the eighth day is in. Now he doesn't go by the news. Am I the medical professional? Well, they're saying that you don't need to. I'm going to kick that vitamin K out then. Don't have to worry about that. So interesting how that works with the blood clotting. And so what they used to do, what I found out, is they would give you the vitamin K shot when your child was born and then circumcise them right away. This is good enough for me to say, God said the eighth day. And by the way, if you're talking old or new covenant, Christ was circumcised. That was good enough for me. You know, if God the Father ever asks me, why did you circumcise your boys? I would say, because you had your boy circumcised, right? He would say, nice job in following the example. You always look at the principle and the example. So we're reading about ceremonial aspects with physical principles. And while we understand that circumcision today was a physical detail required under the terms of the Old Covenant, which also had a spiritual application, we understand from science and medicine today that circumcision is now a health issue, but it's not a salvational issue. We can recognize that one aspect in Acts 15, as it was pointed out in that conference, that did change, didn't it? Now, verse 4 deals with the fact that there's a continuing discharge from a woman for a period of time following childbirth. So interesting. I was one of those that wanted to get a little bit more involved on seeing what my wife was going through and why she was going through some of the changes and what this is all about. Maybe some guys just don't care, but I found it intriguing to say how God designed something. Because I heard for years, I don't know who told me this, but I still have it in the back of my mind, that when those Israelite women, they were so strong and so buff and they were such hard workers, that they had those kids and went right back out in the fields to do their work. And I said, then they weren't following God's statutes. And I bet they were very unhealthy as well. Because there's a health aspect to this too. That's why God said, stay down. Stay down. Rest your body. For the woman, your body's been going through a lot of different changes for 9 months. I'm glad I don't have to do that. Because it intrigues me how God designed that to be. Fascinating how you're able to carry a baby like that for 9 months and have the strength to walk and to do all these things. And I've also seen women that have been anointed later on in life because they haven't followed these principles. And they've prolapsed and things drop because they haven't taken care of their bodies. And I hope those that have gone through this will tell the women, the young women, don't do that. Follow God's statutes. Take care of your bodies. This is a statute. It's a principle. It makes sense that after the woman has gone through this, stay down, let your body rest. Now again, some today, I realize some have jobs, some have other things, and as a result of it, some just suffer. But it talks about the numbers here of adding 33 days and these times following the childbirth. Now, if you add 33 and 7, you come up with 40 days. 40 days that God says, around the average of 40 days to stay down and let your body heal. This is normally what a modern-day doctor would tell a person as well. They even know the principles of this. Normally, a doctor will talk about 6 weeks. It's 42 days. And it's so interesting because the Bible talks about the difference between a male and a female. There are different times for that as well. Why would that be? My guess would be, as the woman is going through the process when you're pregnant for 9 months, that different things happen with a male and different things happen with a female. And a male takes something and a female may take something that the other doesn't. It's the way that God designed it to be. Now, where did that wisdom come from? Here we find medical science coming to the same conclusion of what God instructed from the very beginning. He's the one that made it to be. And he says, when you follow my statutes and my laws, things are going to actually go well for you. And we find out when we try to shortcut it, it just doesn't work out, does it? Again, while these words are tied in with ceremonial aspects, there's also physical principles and guidelines that we can find as guidance and direction for our lives today. I think many of us, as we've grown older, you know, it talks about remembering your Creator in the days of your youth. Why does it work out that way? That when we're younger, we just aren't thinking. We kind of abuse our bodies. And later on in life, you really start to pay for it. Things are achy. The muscles don't work. Things hurt all the time. Because normally we've abused our bodies when we are younger and just didn't take care of them. Sometimes I know injury comes about as well. But again, hopefully more of our younger people read these words and take the advice of some of the elders that have paid the price in some of these areas. Now chapters 13 and 14 deal with health laws that are in terms of contagious diseases such as skin diseases, leprosy, etc. This is instruction to the priesthood as to how they were to recognize something that was contagious from something that was not. The priest played the role of the public health official. Today, we have no Levitical priesthood that functions today, yet the principles and guidelines exist for our civil society. They're just applied in a different way. Normally, now many of us today, if we see something going on, we're going to go to the public health official today, try to find out what it is, be anointed from it, and find out, is this contagious? How do we treat it? What do we do to get rid of this? Leviticus 13, verse 3, let's see what happened back then as they went before the priest. Leviticus 13, verse 3, the priest will examine the sore on the skin of the body, and if the hair on the sore has turned white and the sore appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it's a leprous sore, then the priest will examine him and pronounce him unclean. And don't forget, as God was giving out this instruction, it's fascinating. If you get the opportunity, by the way, this is free, I know, on Netflix. It's called Planet Earth. And if you watch that, sometimes, I told my wife yesterday, sometimes I'd rather watch that than a Bible movie. I mean, you see evidence of God's creation, the way that he made and designed things that are so fascinating. What he did here was simply tell the priest something of how he designed the body to work and how to heal itself. And when somebody's body wasn't in a position to heal itself quickly, the priest had to take a look and they had to be, again, just shut down for a little while longer while their body received the strength to take care of the problem that God had intended the body to fix. Verse 4, but if the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and does not appear to be deeper than the skin and its hair is not turned white, then the priest will isolate the one who has the sore 7 days. And the priest will examine him on the seventh day. And indeed, if the sore appears to be as it was and the sore is not spread on the skin, then the priest will isolate him again another 7 days. Here's a principle here, sometimes that we have to think of. Sometimes people think that they're getting better. And they'll come in and they'll spread a sickness that's not gotten better. And it's happened to us. There have been some of our kids that have gone from winter family weekend, and the parents will say, well, I think they're getting better. Their noses are still draining. And I remember talking to the doc a couple years ago. We had to isolate a couple kids. I felt so bad for doing it, but we've gone through this so much. Frankly, when the doc said that, they're out. And I feel bad that you've got to stay out, but I think we've learned enough that this is not going to spread among our kids. We had a sickness that spread. Thankfully, they kept it to a minimum this year at winter camp, but we had another sickness that went around. We've learned to isolate and to quarantine. No questions asked. It doesn't matter how someone feels, because we really feel bad when 3/4 of the entire camp gets sick, like happened back in 2009. And that's still happening. And I feel bad to say this, but if you're feeling sick and you don't feel that you fully recovered and you still have that cough, as much as I'd like you to come to services, I'd rather have you stay home and follow the principles until you know that your body is back to full strength. And by the way, this is one flu bug that goes around that says if you start feeling better and you jump up right away, you're going to have relapse and get even sicker sometimes. We really have to walk carefully on taking care of our bodies and listening to what God says here. These are principles again, because even though it was getting better, they had him go back for another 7 days. Verse 6, the priest will examine him again on the 7th day. If the sore has faded and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest will pronounce him clean. It's only a scab, and he'll wash his clothes and he'll be clean. So the basic principles that God gave to Israel in terms of health laws were laws of sanitation and hygiene and quarantine. If someone appeared to have an infectious disease, you kept them isolated until you knew for certain. That certainly happened to us back in 1983. And I was among the first to contract something called scabies from someone else that had it. And it is so itchy, and it's a microscopic bug that goes under your skin. I found out from my mom later on that it was a World War II outbreak that took place. And why the solution for us is to rub a solution that contained lindane, which was a birch borer insecticide, we are putting that on our skin. I didn't do enough research. I probably wouldn't have done that. I would have done like they did back in World War II and rubbed some turpentine. That's much less toxic and will take care of the problem as well. Modern-day solutions sometimes will actually poison you worse than some of the problem is. And we've got to be careful of that as well. But these things took place the following year. There was a measles outbreak in Big Sandy. And if anything that we learned from that is as soon as you spot it, you quarantine it. And then you pray about it and do the best that you can to get rid of that. But sometimes we've forgotten some of these things. So see, here's something that's all the way back to Leviticus, that the principles still apply in our lifetime today. God means what he says, and we've got to see and look and see exactly what he's trying to say to us. So this is also happening not just here, but especially in some of the third world countries. The Red Cross will come in and supply the people with food, clothing, and shelter, but they're still dying because contamination and disease just spread so rapidly. They don't know anything about God's laws of health and hygiene. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 23. And let's go to verse 10 here. How serious that God took this. Now, we tried to find the principles. I didn't have to move out of my house. I don't know if it was airborne or if I would have gotten it or not, but my wife took the couch for the week. So didn't want to spread that through the coughing that she had. And we tried to be as careful as we could about touching tissues, or I tried to keep really clean by rinsing the dishes with really hot water and soap and things like that. So we tried to use a lot of caution in doing that. But again, when you're talking about a camp with a few million people, this is why God said this. In verse 10 of Deuteronomy 23, if there is anyone among you who becomes unclean by some occurrence in the night, then he'll go outside the camp. He will not come inside the camp. But it will be when the evening arrives that he'll wash with water, and when the sun sets, then he can come into the camp. Brethren, this wasn't even a sickness. This is if you bumped up to something that was unclean. This is how serious they took it, that they actually couldn't. Well, what are you going to do for the rest of the day? Make sure that you're clean. Find some source of water or where you can ever wash to become clean when you come back in the camp. That's why he took it so serious. Verse 12, also you'll have, look what he says here, a place outside the camp where you may go out, and you will have an implement among your equipment, and when you sit down outside, you will dig it and turn and cover your refuse. This is when Johnny on the spot could have made millions of dollars at the time. But look how specific that God said. Can you imagine a million people that were just going to go to a bathroom and nobody would pick up? You know, they're getting diseases, by the way, now, even in the Dominican Republic, from people walking on the beaches because of cats and other animals going on the beaches, and people will walk on this and they come back with roundworm. This is becoming a problem on some of the areas that people go to now. So this is such a serious thing as far as the cleanliness that takes place. But once again, look how detailed and specific that God got with this. The decline of the death rate in the 20th century is probably not fully understood or appreciated to be none other than the increase in sanitation and hygiene. Apart from all the marvels of medical technology and science, the laws of hygiene and sanitation have played a major role in the prevention of the spread of plagues and infectious disease. And as late as the 1860s, during the American Civil War, battlefield surgeons would go from one soldier to another, just simply wiping their blade on their pants. Far more died from infection than from the wounds themselves. And when you take these principles, that you can see that when blood touched something, it had to be washed. If battlefield physicians of previous centuries would have just practiced that one principle, consider how many lives would have been saved. Many of these things are just very basic, but people still don't regard them. Other principles that are specified by God deal with man's relationship with the environment. Remember I said at the beginning, relationship between man and God, between man and man, between man and the environment, how we take care of what God gave us. God put man in the Garden of Eden, remember, to dress it, to keep it, to take care of it. And so that deals with the environment today. Deuteronomy chapter 22 and verse 6. By the way, this has gone both ways. I know we've got what we call environmentalists that go way off to something that God did not intend, and we've got other ones that don't care. We've got mercury contamination in the Cumberland Lake because of coal runoff. Something happened there that somebody missed, that somebody let go, that should have been taken care of. A lot of these things, by the way, we're going to be taken care of in the future. That's why it's good that we know this. These laws, by the way, are going to be taught to the people in the millennium. That's why it's important for us to really grasp them and understand them, what God says. But look, again, the detail of what he gets to hear in Deuteronomy 22 and verse 6. If a bird's nest happens to be before you along the way, and any tree or on the ground with young ones or eggs, with the mother sitting on the young or on the eggs, you'll not take the mother with the young. Stop there before you read any further. Why would he say that? Think about why did God say, don't take the mother with the young? If you take the mom, there's no more young, isn't there? God wanted the species to proliferate. He didn't want man to wipe it out, and we've been pretty good with that. I don't know how many species that we've eradicated, but I know that we have. And if we didn't have some of the laws that we do today on man's books, we'd wipe out a lot more species as well. So God got very detailed on man not being selfish and thinking about what he was doing. Verse 7, it says, you'll surely let the mother go, take the young for yourself, that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days. There was a blessing or a cursing came along with this as to man's attitude that he had with the environment, that it would prolong your days. God didn't take lightly on somebody being selfish. He said, your days are numbered because you disrespect my word. These are the statutes of God. These still, the principles here still exist to this very day. These will be taught. The applications are still there. God is dealing with a mindset here. It's a way of life, not just one incident. This deals with a man's respect to what God had created and that his creation may continue to proliferate. Verse 8, let's look at this. Very interesting here. Now, by the way, I think we've been pretty good in this country and in other, I would say, Israelite countries, if you would, when it comes to this statute. When you build a new house, then you'll make a parapet, or a parapet, which is identified as a railing for your roof, that you may not bring guilt or bloodshed on your household if anyone falls on it. Now, you've heard recently, if you've been checking in the news on some of these cruise lines again, I don't know if people have just been drinking. All I know is I've been on a couple of cruise ships, and there are railings there. How they get over these railings, I'm not sure. Some of it, again, may be drinking. Some of it may be somebody just threw them over. But we've got safety procedures, I realize, within this country. If you go to any of our places, apartment complex or whatever, they've got to have railings. There are safety procedures. This occurred in the time of Israel that God said, you just don't make something and let somebody walk off your balcony or out of your house. There was a requirement that they would have some safety features that were there. Verse 9. You shall not sow your vineyard with different kinds of seed, lest the yield of the seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. There's something, when you sow a grapevine, you sow a grapevine. You don't sow grapevine and onions. You know, there are specifics on God designed things to be a certain way. And for the most part, I can say for the most part, people have done that. And yet sometimes that's not been done. There are other improper procedures that we've done with farming that are going to have to be changed. Verse 9, you shall not sow your vineyard with different kinds of seed, lest the yield of seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard. I'm sorry, I just read that. Verse 10, you shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Can an ox and a donkey be friends? You would think, why not? You know, really, I would have to talk to somebody that maybe has tried that before. But if my memory can serve me right, they just don't plow together. You get what's called a team of oxen or a team of mules that can pull together. I know that there are certain ways, for instance, for those that know horses, if you've heard of the Clydesdales, the Budweiser Clydesdales, they find these horses that are able to pull together. There's one sometimes naturally that will take more of a lead. They've got personalities, and they'll put them in places where they're best suited. Some will work together better as a team, and people that have animals know how to do these things. But God certainly knows what he's doing when he says something like this. So I may look at verse 10 and go, oh, that was this Old Testament law. That certainly doesn't apply to that today. Or I can say, you know something? I've never been out there yet. I bet there's some kind of principle that goes along with this, because this is a statute that still applies to this day. There's a meaning of why God said why to do this. Verse 11. This is one of those old spokesman's clubs things that maybe some of the women have heard today as well. You shall not wear a garment of different sorts, such as wool and linen mixed together. Why, is it toxic? I mean, when you get that, is all of a sudden your body poisoned? No, this is an issue, once again, of quality. When you really look into it, how it goes together, it's not a good quality garment. And God said, I want my people to have good quality. I can pretty much guarantee you, in the millennium, there's not going to be any more super Walmarts. We're going to teach quality. And people are going to have the time to make things that they're good at doing. And something will have value to it. Something will have quality, because we have a God that's a God of excellence. And he's a God of value. And he's a God of quality. And he wants his people to be those of quality and value in the heart, inwardly especially, but outwardly as well. So as we were taught a long time ago, we buy quality. We buy the best that we can without going into debt. We don't spend ourselves into debt, but sometimes if something is desired or wanted, then we save for the quality, for the best that we can get. So you can find the same statute, actually, in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 19. It says you'll keep... Let's go back there. Leviticus 19, basically the same thing is found. There's a little bit something different here that I want to recognize here. Leviticus 19, verse 19, I've said before that these are statutes because the statutes are things that are engraved. They're not necessarily a part of the Ten Commandments, but they're specific enactments that are mentioned by God that are still in existence today too. Verse 19 of Leviticus 19, you will keep my statutes. You'll not let your livestock breed with another kind. Why? Why would you think that? I mean, just stepping back after all that we've gone through and looking at God's laws, what conclusion would you come to? Why does God want to make it difficult? Does he think we can actually outdo him? Let's think in our mind, because that's the mindset. We keep trying, don't we? Genetics? We keep trying to genetically modify something, thinking that we can make something better, that we can make it drought resistant, that we can make it this resistant or that better or that better. And every time I've seen mankind try to do something like this, it doesn't get better. It gets worse. You can't outdo what God designed to be perfect. From the very beginning, when he made things after its kind, what did he say? This is good. And every time man touches it, it becomes not more than good, but less than good. It's good enough, I believe, for all of us now is to look and see why God says what he says. Because he doesn't want a less quality product. What he made is the best that can be. You'll not sow your field with mixed seed, nor will a garment of mixed linen and wool come upon you. These are quality aspects. These were physical matters that had to do with purity and quality, dealing with the way that God designed his creation and of our respect toward his design and instruction. Now, there were actually laws that governed warfare. Believe it or not, God said, you know, you would think he would simply say, don't go to war. But he actually sent the Israelites into battle many times as well. But there were rules of warfare as well. Deuteronomy chapter 20. Let's go back and see a principle of warfare here that dealt with the environment. You know, with mankind, when they go to war, it all goes to pot. There are no rules. I mean, there's supposed to be. There's supposed to be a Geneva Convention. But in many cases, not just between man and man, but between man and the environment. And God said, if you went to battle, there's going to be some restrictions here. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 19, when you besiege a city for a long time while making war against it to take it, you will not destroy its trees by wielding an axe against them. If you can eat of them, do not cut them down to use in the siege, for the tree of the field is man's food. Only the trees which you know are not trees for food you may destroy and cut down to build siege works against the city that makes war with you until it's subdued. Well, what's that have to do with today? I mean, we're not besieging cities. Once again, this has to do with the principle of what God says on taking care of the environment. You just don't go through and wipe something out. I see principles still violated today. You know, and you get less than you get a really bad product. Do you notice today in many of the subdivisions that are being built, where do they go? What do they do? They go wipe out everything. And I go through some subdivisions and I see these. What makes the subdivision to me sometimes is the trees. Do you ever go through some subdivisions and you see these gorgeous trees that are absolutely beautiful? And then you go see these really brand new subdivisions, and frankly, they're pretty nice houses. But they wipe out all the trees just for the convenience of coming in and laying out the design. That's not what God's intention to be. And I'll tell you what, when the cities are redesigned in the future, many of these things are going to be taken into effect. There are going to be planners. There are going to be people that take a look at this and go, you know something? I'm not going to wipe everything out. I'm going to use that there. That looks beautiful there. I'm going to plan this around this. That's what we're going to be free to do. And have respect toward the environment that God made. So I'm going to ask right now if these would get passed out. Tom, would you mind passing these? And Lloyd, would you take some of these to pass to one side too? It's kind of a summary today of what I've gone through for the last months, actually. I finally came to the conclusion. on these aspects of God's law. We can just cover these really quickly before I finish. So we've completed a basic study of God's laws, which are a reflection of His love through us, for us, giving us guidance, giving us instruction, giving us direction for mankind to have happy and abundant lives. Now, the Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 8, verse 7, that the carnal mind will fight against God, will fight against His laws and ways, and it's through the understanding, the spirit, intent of the law of yielding to and respecting God that mankind's going to make any progress. Brethren, we're going through hard times, and they're going to get worse. So for those that see the news and get frustrated, it's not going to get better. Sometimes we'd like it to, we would expect it to, we think that things may get better. The attitudes are going to get worse because there's a Satan, the devil, that's behind it. You know, when you see the anger, when you see the resentment, when you see the division, when you see the lying, thank you so much, that's taking place, it's not only happened in our country, it's happened in the church as well. That Satan stamp that you can see, if he's the one that knows his time is short, which I believe it is, then the Bible says the intensity level is going to go up. So if the news frustrates you, watch the planet Earth. You know, watch a little bit to keep up on it, but don't focus on that to let it frustrate you, because it's going to get worse. What we should be doing is studying God's Word, looking at His intent, looking at His direction, looking at ways we can change. How can we change? How can we better understand this, that we can help somebody as well? Even the nation of Israel, of whom God loved and blessed, as long as they continued to obey God, fell short, and they were eventually vomited out of the promised land. God said, if there were only such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep my laws, that it would be well with them and with their children forever. My opportunity now, I mean, my kids are out. It blows my mind that it's so fast. You know, we tried to teach our kids the principles, falling short, as every parent will do, but tried to teach them about God's laws and still try to reinforce them by examples and by walking and talking that way of life now. And now we've got grandkids as well to be able to teach. You know, God gives that blessing through family for us to continue to teach, maybe not such in a specific way as we're able to do with our children, but in other different ways as well that we can teach about God's laws and about God's ways. From the beginning here, when you see the law of God and going through some of these specific scriptures, let's just read through these again. Matthew 5, verse 17. Do not reason that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I have not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Isaiah 42, verse 21, the Lord is well pleased for His righteousness' sake. He will exalt, He will magnify the law and make it honorable. And we can see that prophecy was fulfilled. Christ did keep the law. Every jot and every tittle of the law was kept by Jesus Christ. Deuteronomy 31, verse 12, gather the people together, men and women and children and the stranger that's within your gates, that they may hear, that they may learn, that they may fear, they may have a deep reverence and respect for the Lord your God, to observe to do all the words. Remember that Hebrew word? It's not the Hebrew word here because this was Greek. Dabar, the words, every word, all the words of this law. And as Mr. Horchak pointed out, that's what our specific theme and instruction is, to go out and to teach these same words that we're learning now, to respect the way of what God says. Not to do away with it or not to do an end around, but to understand the full and deep meaning. Deuteronomy 5, verse 29, oh, that there was such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always. And commandments is not just 10, as we understand. It has to do with the judgments, the testimonies, the statutes, all of God's law contained in these specific commandments here, that it would be well with them and with their children forever. Matthew 24 brings us up to a point where we're at today. Verse 12, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will wax cold. Why do you think we see such hatred? I watched that State of the Union. It wasn't dislike. There's hatred. And that's going to get worse. I know one of our own senators mentioned that, Marco Rubio. He said he used to be able to respectfully disagree. He said it's come to the time where it's about at fisticuffs now, where people want to fight or kill each other over disagreements. That dismays a lot of us. I know it does. It does me. But I realize I can't do anything about it. One thing is, if we continue, we will be able to do something about it. It will be our time. You and I will be the senators, the governors, the leaders that deal without the red tape, without the garbage, without the lies, only God's truth. That's what we have to be happy and to look forward to. Psalm 19, I wrote this down because it basically, David covered this. God, David knew about all of God's law. Verse 70 says, the law, the Torah of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony, the eduth of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts, the pikud of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment, the mitzvah of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments, the mishpat of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them is great reward. Do we really fully understand that? Is that the value of God's word to us today? Is it more important? Is it of more value than our homes or our TVs or our computers? Do we really see the value of God's law and the happiness and content it can bring to other people? Micah chapter 4, verse 2 says, many nations will come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law will go forth out of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and we will be administrators under Jesus Christ of that very word to teach other people. We are learning to be teachers now. We are learning to understand what God means by his word. On the other side, I have all the terms listed that you can take a look at. In Matthew verse 4, it says, it's written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word. Not just certain things here and there, but by every word that's contained in this scripture. These are all important. Every word is important to us. We can read of understand of what God has for not just us, but for the world in the future. God's laws, once again, will be established through this entire earth. Everyone will have the opportunity to learn and live by God's laws. And it's only then that mankind will truly understand happiness and peace. And may God speed that day.